Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Austin and Jim. Syria continues the bubble. What I'd like to explore today is the Russian connection in Syria. Jim, why is Russia so involved with the Syrian conflict?
Russia has always been in favor of keeping dictatorships in business. Even before, you know, the Soviet Union ended, obviously. But since the Soviet Union ended, Russia has shown an uncomfortable amount of concern in preventing outside interference in the rule of dictators. I don't know if this is part cultural, part political, part whatever. China, which is still technically a communist police state, also shares that interest, as do all of the remaining, well, three, I think, of the remaining communist police states. That includes North Korea and Cuba, and some Islamic police states like Sudan. So basically, it's a dictator's collective. And they look out for each other. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, it is what it is. Russia recently has been extremely clever at this. They can no longer threaten, with military force because they haven't got it. But they have a bully pulpit. I mean, they have a fairly extensive international news organization, state-run, which broadcasts in over 100 languages or issues information via the internet and what have you. And I see a lot of it in my business, and it's very on message. I mean, it's very coordinated. It's almost embarrassing. But for a lot of people who are just casual consumers of the news, all they know is, the Russian reports are another, a source. And although, to people like us who basically are immersed in all this news, as it were, on a constant basis, and see the Russian stuff as obviously biased, and, we can see what the real message is, a lot of people don't. And they say, well, but, Ta said, or Russia, et cetera, et cetera, Novosti said, and that carries weight. Their latest coup, this business with the Syrian chemical weapons, I think will go down as a masterpiece. Because basically what's going on here, Russia and Iran are the primary foreign allies of the Assad government in Syria. Now, the Assad government is in very bad shape. They're bankrupt. Most of their armed forces have deserted, primarily because most of their armed forces were Sunni Muslims, and the war in Syria is basically a rebellion of the Sunni majority, which is about 75% of the population, against the Shia minority, which is about 10%, and of course the other minorities who stick together, the Christians, the Druze, what have you. It's long overdue, and Assad has been losing until the Iranians stepped in with billions of dollars in subsidies, money they don't really have because Iran has lost over half its oil income in the last year because of increased embargoes, and they are hurting really bad. So they can't keep it up indefinitely. And so I don't know if they sat down and worked this strategy out. We won't find that out for a long time, if ever. But the Iranian situation is they can't keep this up. By the end of the year or within a year, Iran simply won't have the money. I mean, they're either going to have a rebellion inside Iran from starving Iranians, or they're going to have to cut the Syrians off. So what the Russians have done is basically bought the Assad's more time by preventing Western air attacks. Now, the Russians and everybody else in there, dictatorship clique, are well aware that the NATO air power, which only had Americans in a supporting role, was decisive in Libya in ending a revolution against Gaddafi. somebody else the Russians are quoting. And they see the same situation happening in Syria. And, of course, the Syrian rebels understand this as well and have been asking for air power. And, of course, the American president cooperatively said several months ago that if the Syrians used any of their chemical weapons, they would use military force against them. The chemical weapons were used, and the American government was rapidly looking for a way out short of military intervention. The Russians provided it by saying, we have gotten Syria to agree to give up its chemical weapons. Now, this was perfect, because until that point, Syria never admitted it had chemical weapons. It was generally known that they did, but, Syria always said, oh, no, we don't have them. So suddenly they have chemical weapons, and they're willing to give them up, but they won't say where they are. They have said that it will cost, about $1 billion to secure and dispose of those weapons. But anybody who's observed how the chemical weapons disposal routine works understands that it takes a very long time. For example, Libya, which also admitted back in 2003 that they had chemical weapons and agreed to destroy them, had a end date for that weapons destruction of, I think it was 2015 or 16. And of course it was stalled by the civil war, and it still hasn't really resumed yet. So this means that with this agreement, which has not been finalized yet, the Syrian government, becomes a ward of the United States. Because the United States has now said that getting rid of those chemical weapons is more important than punishing the Syrians with airstrikes for using them in the first place and killing 1,400 of their own people. And the Russians internally, I mean, from what I've heard from inside Russia, they are not quite dancing in the streets, but they are running around patting each other on the back because they really stuck it to these Americans now. They're hoist on their own petard, whatever you want to call it. The Russians have some more palatable terms for it, meaning basically the Americans are screwed. Because there's no way the Americans, as where the Russians see it, can back out from this, that they have committed themselves to not attacking now, and they've also committed themselves to working with the Assad government to make sure that these chemical weapons are secured by peacekeepers or whatever. That has not been decided yet, and are ultimately destroyed. They can only do that as long as there still is an Assad government. So you can see what kind of mess we have here now. The rebels are not amused.
Austin, your take on all this?
Well, look, Jim's analysis was superb. There is one point in there I need to address. Syria in July of 2012 confirmed that it had chemical weapons. As a matter of fact, I did a column about it, and it's in the On Point section. And if I have my fingers were a little faster here, Dan, I'd bring it up. Here it is. Syria's weapons of mass destruction in transition, July 24th. 2012, and you have Syria's foreign minister, Jihad Makdisi. How's that for a name, Jim? Jihad. Is he like this? He says any stocks of weapons of mass destruction or any unconventional weapons that the Syrian Arab Republic possesses would never be used against the Syrian people during the crisis in any circumstances, no matter how the crisis will evolve. All of the stocks of these weapons are monitored and guarded by the Syrian army. These weapons are meant to be used only and strictly in the event of external aggression against the Syrian Arab Republic. Now, that said, I will tell you from Dan, and Jim knows this, in the fall of 1974, I took a class in chemical and nuclear defense, and there was also a segment in biological defense at Aberdeen Proving Ground. Now, figure out how a guy with background in English lit and physical anthropology gets sent to that class and tell me, actually, it was great, and I was given an option on it, and I selected it. Glad I went. Long course that I don't think they quite teach the same course on this. And one of the segments, short subcourses in there, was an evaluation of chemical defense material that the Israelis had captured in 1973, about a little over a year earlier in the Yom Kippur War. Because I'm taking this class at Aberdeen in late September, October, November, early December of 1974. And the conclusion there was that, hey, wait a minute, the Syrians have significant stocks of chemical weapons. And they were, part of it was, is that they had the Israelis captured, and this is all open source material now, it's long known. They captured some chemical defense equipment that you could work back to see that it was designed for not just GB and VX, but GD Somain, S-O-M-A-N, which is another form of nerve agent. So, it's no secret. And the fact that Jihad Mekdisi in July of last year revealed it was not a surprise. The Israelis follow this very carefully, and now I'm not talking from anything that I got in a class, but you get that kind of a background. You know how to interpret what you read in the open source press, if I may say so. Remember, Jim did a little artillery work in with some special stuff in Korea, and you learn how to understand what somebody trying to signal you in the open sources. So I read a lot in the 80s and early 90s in open source on about Syria's chemical weapons program. Part of it, I was also interested in it because the Iraqis had used it on the Iranians, and the Iraqis under Saddam had used it on the Kurds. The Israelis tracked this stuff very, very closely. And if we go back to a couple of strategy talks, I guess the last strategy talk a little bit, that one of the things that I had mentioned was that, you know, you delay and don't launch a punitive strike when it's time to punish. But unlike Saddam's Iraq, which the intel guys would tell you was opaque and murky, is the Israelis have a good view of a lot of what goes on in Syria because they think their very survival depends on it. Now, the Israelis know where the stuff in general was in July of 2012, and I think they knew where the stuff in general was in mid-late August of this year. Now, let's work back to what Jim had said. One thing. Now, let's go back and review what President Obama said August 20th, 2012. You read what he said, it is him personally saying chemical weapons use, if proven, is a red line. Everything changes. And he said it was a red line for him. Now, give him credit. It is understand it has kind of, sort of, been a red line, not just for the United States, but for NATO as well. You can go back in early August, and Hillary Clinton and then Secretary of State and the Turkish foreign minister talked about Syrian use of chemical weapons on unarmed civilians as being a game changer, a red line in the same way. They were repeating what has actually been something, and I'm not going to say it's a precise commitment, but a U.S. policy on use of weapons of mass destruction in these kind of chaotic developing world or situations. The roots of it, Dan, are really, and I think Jim will, it'd be interesting Jim's comment on this, are in Mussolini's use of what, phosgene and mustard on the Ethiopians? And that what they used? Yeah, what they used during our League of Nations, and nobody did anything. And it was, the evidence was just totally solid. Yeah, there are pictures of these tribesmen, tribal warriors with, you know, their legs eaten and blistered by liquid mustard, which is a blistered blister agent. And it was one of the here is the slippery slope that leads to World War II. I'm not saying that that's what leads to it, but the failure to act. So say, yeah, that's a game changer. The thing is what Obama said was he put his own credibility on the line. And even despite all the obfuscatory language we've had over the last, actually the last 3 weeks, four weeks. I noted in a report the Tuesday night, Robert Gates and Leon Panetta, both former Secretaries of Defense, the Obama administration, discussed punitive strikes or intervention in Syria. Gates is against it. Panetta is for it. And what Panetta said in his statement was, the president's got to back up what he says, his own credibility. So I think it's definitely that was what was done. If you want to go back and say what the misstep, a misstep was either declaring it a red line, putting his own weight of his own office and prestige behind it, and then that bizarre week of I'm going to do it, then I'm not going to do it, then stop and doing it. Now, Jim is giving the Russians incredible credit here. He says it's a masterpiece. I think a lot of this is impromptu, looking, you know, taking advantage of a diplomatic target opportunity presented by the indecisiveness, lack of clarity, and genuine poor leadership on the part of the Obama administration. And another critical point on this, and this is something I quoted in a column a couple of weeks ago. I think I mentioned it in a strategy talk. The French General Desportes, who was interviewed in Le Mans right after Obama pulled the rug out from French President Hollande and said, you know, this is off and the like, he said, whether we like it or not, the global order, such as it is backed up by the willingness of Western powers to act and to defend it. And they follow what's happened. U.S. President committed U.S. bona fides to act against a dangerous punk dictator. Jim's described the Assad regime very well. But I'll tell you what, Assad, just like Putin, is very sophisticated in terms of being able to manipulate what Jim was talking about, low information voters, low information public, operating on impressions. I mean, he did a masterful interview earlier this week, and it is a delaying tactic, a stalling tactic, just like Jim says. We see what these guys are up to, but because you have now put this into this forum, committed to the bona fides of Vladimir Putin, and a process, and Jim described the other problems, what's the mechanics of this? I'm going to tell you, it is very hard, Dan, to destroy chemical weapons. I say that based on that course I took in 74. No, I got a look at some of that as an issue in 77, 78, where I got off of active duty because there were issues of what we were doing with some of our old chemical weapons, weapon stocks. They're hard to deal with, hard to destroy. And now the ultimate thing is, as Assad says, he wants the U.S. to pay $1 billion to do it. It's a total mess.
Yeah, well, as you know, just about 100 miles from my home is where a lot of the activity destroying the chemical weapons is going on.
Dugway Proving Grounds? Dugway? Is that what that is?
Right, yeah. Yep. And my my software company in the 90s started a contract out there to help with the tracking software and like that of that. And I know some of my original employees are still out there 20 years later, and they're still in the process of destroying our stockpiles and probably will be for another 20 years.
Well, and they're trying to do it safely.
Right.
And it's the mechanics issue. The mechanisms for doing it are not at all clear. And now here's the thing is a punishment, a punitive strike is swift and punished. And now it's a year, 2 years. Essentially, now Putin, and Jim alluded to this, has set it up so that the United States has an investment in keeping Assad in power.
It's right.
That's the masterful stroke, right, Jim? Is that what you meant?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Okay. Because Assad needs time. Assad apparently believes, and I think this has been the plan all along, that given enough time, they can beat down the rebels. The rebels are disorganized. They have a split between the Islamic radical groups, who are only about 10% of the armed rebels out there, and the secular ones. But there's also splits within the Islamic radicals. Again, who are the most dangerous fighters, and this has helped the rebels. These are the guys who provide the suicide bombers and the basically fighters who will attack, you know, in suicidal, you know, situations. You need people like that in combat, especially a revolution, rebellion, where you don't have a lot of trained troopers, you know, among the rebels. But the government realizes that the rebels are even worse off, the rebel civilians, are even worse off financially than the Assad supporters, who are about a third of the population, I mean, in terms of numbers. And what they are trying to do, and are quite successful at it, is to drive the civilian, the pro-rebel civilians out of the country or out of their homes. I mean, already about 20% of the population has been driven from their homes by the fighting, and about half of them have left the country. So what they're basically, what the Assads are doing, he says, all right, we got enemies, our neighbors can have them. If they want to allow, you know, refugee camps to be set up on their territory, fine. They can have all the people who won't obey my orders. And it sounds like a very brutal and bloody-minded situation, but that's the way the Assad family has always operated. His father, you know, wiped out an entire town, killed over 10,000 people when he had a Muslim Brotherhood uprising in the 1980s, and that basically made an impression. Well, the rebels are coming back this time saying, remember, you know, Hama, you know, the 1980s atrocity, and never again, et cetera, et cetera. And they're determined to stick it out, but, you know, human nature being what it is, people can only take so much. And the Assads feel that with the support in terms of mercenaries hired with Iranian money, you know, Shia men are being called upon, especially in Iraq, but all through the Muslim world, whether it's Shia, to come and fight in Syria. And Iran will basically has recruiters there who will pay for the airfare, pay them a monthly stipend, you know, in case they have families or just, you know, are supporting kin back home. And that encourages a lot of these guys, hey, great adventure, you know, God's will, it's a mission from God, et cetera, et cetera. All this stuff plays well in that part of the world. And they have, you know, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people under arms as that mercenary force already, plus at least 3,000 or 4,000 Hezbollah fighters who are trained, most of them, often by Iranian trainers in there. So this mercenary army, which is more enthusiastic, not as fanatical as the Islamic terrorist groups that are supporting the rebels, but they can stand up to the Islamic terrorist groups. They're a much more difficult opponent than the regular army is. And this is slowly turning the tide. Now, that turning of the tide has not happened yet. The rebel advance has been slowed, not totally stopped. But every day that the rebels say this quite openly, every day that they do not have air support, they lose people, and literally and psychologically, you know, people just desert, you know, fewer people join, and they can do the math. And what the Russians have done is basically give the Assads, you know, more time and increase their opportunity to basically crush the rebellion. And that's a new, you know, development in Syria.
Dan, can I? Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead and ask, and there's something I want to toss in here in a second. But
okay. Well, one of the things I'd like to explore is how Russia's own Muslim population issues play into all of this. What is the response in their Muslim areas to their support of Assad, rather, and getting involved in this whole issue?
Well, Dan, I think that
well, in the last decade, the Russians have.
The short answer to that is that they're worried about Chechnya and Dagestan, and those are Sunni radicals tied with al-Qaeda. And the thing is that they see Jim's analysis of the Russians supporting dictators for their own internal reason, especially Putin, I'm totally agree with. It's one thing I've been writing about for, you know, decade, 12 years on that point. But the thing is that they see Assad as someone who is fighting Sunni radicals, and he is. I mean, Jim, you want to add something to that?
Yeah, the Russians have basically crushed the Sunni Islamic rebellion in the Caucasus and elsewhere. I mean, it's not gone. It's still there. But they have suppressed it using their typically Russian, methods, which are, not politically correct. But they've worked for the Russians so far. By going in with Iran, they anger the Sunni Muslim radicals in the Caucasus. But these guys are already about as angry as you can possibly get. Indeed, it's helping Russia because a lot of the Chechen, the Caucasus, they're not just Chechen, but there's some from Dagestan and Ingushetia, et cetera, have been going to Syria. So instead of fighting Russians, they're fighting, Syrians. And that's fine by the Russians. Assad doesn't really complain about that because basically he's getting all this other, help in the UN and elsewhere from the Russians. But the Russians also like this alliance with Iran because then Iran basically owes them. And Iran, while it only controls Shia Islamic or has influence with Shia Islamic radical groups, it has a lot of intelligence about what Sunni Islamic terrorist groups are up to. And they are basically willing to share that with the Russians, basically be more helpful to the Russians, tip them off if there's some, big attack coming planned in Russia, et cetera. Stuff like that can be extremely useful. So the Russians are looking after their own interests. And, of course, the Russians also understand that the more unrest there is in the Middle East, the higher oil prices go. And Russia is a major oil exporter who can export oil no matter how bad things get in the Middle East. So they basically like, a volatile situation in the Middle East because it basically increases their national income. So the Russians have a whole bunch of reasons, for backing Assad. But I think the basic one is psychological. They don't like this idea of, the community of nations, as it were, getting together and basically, telling a country that they're run by a bunch of, tyrants, and then saying, we're going to do something about it. They don't like that, because that's how Russia's been run for centuries.
Dan, let me...
Austin, you wanted to throw something in here?
Yeah, I want to go back. A lot of our listeners and readers are interested in how to make war. This popped up. It's popped up since we started recording on the Al Arabiya website said 9 minutes ago. And it's Syrian chemical weapons stockpile has more than 1,000 tons of agents. And what is what they have got in their English language edition here is a translation of a declassified intelligence estimate provided by French intelligence. And drawn, get this, you'll think this is funny, Jim, drawn from French-only sources. So that's that French-only sources. And it goes through an analysis here of what the French believe are the predominant chemical agents within Assyrian arsenal. Long range on Scud missiles, they use VX, persistent agent. Then there's a mix on shorter range, whether between sarin and VX. Both the shorter range material is VX. They also have mustard and some other toxic agents. And here's how I read this, since this has been made available and declassified. I think the French are angry that they on board for an attack, and then had the, as I said earlier, the carpet pulled out from under them. Part of what this report does, too, is go through French analysis of alleged Syrian government attacks in April of this year, including being able, French competent services, I wonder how that really read in French, have obtained samples of either biomedical, blood, urine, environmental ground, or material munitions debris taken on victims and sites and attacks in the town of Sarakeb, April 29th, 2013, and in Joe Barr in mid-April of 2013. I also had looked at, the, even though it doesn't cover it, the chemical attacks, chemical attack on Aleppo in Syria in mid-March. And I recall reading it then, I said it looked pretty convincing that they had been used. I didn't write about it, but it looked that way. Now, what it gets into finally in the end of this document is that use of classical tactical artillery pattern and the rockets is convincing that the Assad regime actually did it. So this is tossed out, too, because the Russians and Syrians Assad regime are coming out and saying that they're going to produce all this evidence that rebels used chemical agents. And they may have, but they didn't use them in mass for mass casualties.
Right. Well, we'll wrap it up there. I'm sure we're going to just this is going to be an ongoing saga for who knows how much longer. But it'll be something that we'll be staying on top of. And those of you that read Strategy Page know that we're reporting on it almost every day. So we will talk to you gentlemen next time and have a good week.
Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.